It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning. How many of you remember when President Barack Obama was practicing his own form of foreign policy? Do you remember leading from behind? Do you remember him reaching out to Iran and Cuba, giving Iran millions of dollars, opening, you know, relations with Cuba with nothing in exchange? Anybody remember that climate change was the issue that was the most threatening to the United States? Anybody remember that we were not allowed to say that ISIS and Al-Qaeda were anything beyond violent extremism? Anybody remember that? It sounded something like this.
There have been times where America's shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive.
My job to the Muslim world is to communicate that the Americans are not your enemy. We sometimes make mistakes.
We've at times been disengaged, and at times we've sought to dictate our terms.
Obama launched his foreign policy with an apology tour. What a contrast when yesterday President Donald Trump stood at the Reagan Center and said this.
America is coming back, and America is coming back strong. With every decision and every action, we are now putting America first. We are rebuilding our nation, our confidence, and our standing in the world. With this strategy, we are calling for a great reawakening of America, a resurgence of confidence, and a rebirth of patriotism, prosperity, and pride. With the strategy I am announcing today, we are declaring that America is in the game, and America is going to win.
All right, that was just an excerpt of that speech. Let me just say there were four pillars, familiar word, of what the president is proposing. Number one, protecting the American people, the homeland, and the American way of life. Number two, promoting American prosperity. Number three, preserving peace through strength. Sounds familiar. Number four, advancing American influence. Well, I can't think of anyone whose opinion of the speech I would more defer to than Frank Gaffney, the founder and president of Center for Security Policy. I've asked Frank to join us today for his impression of what President Trump said yesterday. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, it's so great to talk with you, especially in the aftermath of that rather extraordinary address by the president and the national security strategy that it's accompanied it.
Did it surprise you in its content? Did it surprise you how conservative it actually was?
Well, I've just been trying to distill to its essence my thoughts on this for our commentary, which will be broadcast shortly. And the way I put it, Sandy, is it doesn't surprise me, given that this is what the president ran on. What is a little surprising is that for the past year, his administration, I think largely because of, well, sabotage of his agenda by some of his own, I call them insubordinate subordinates, has not been able to advance that agenda. Certainly not in the full-throated way and I think comprehensive direction that he's now given. And I'm hopeful that the American people who voted for him, as did I, for his commitment to effect a major course correction from what you just so succinctly captured there in the clips from Obama, to spare us Obama's third term, most especially in the national security, the homeland security portfolios. These are the sorts of things that I think we've all been yearning for, and I'm very hopeful that he will now be able, having squandered, I'm afraid, much of that first year, precious first year in office in so many of these respects, to get back on track. But I have to say, I think it will take some new personnel to accompany his new strategy if it's to be faithfully executed, which is, of course, the ultimate test.
Yes, and this is what we see all the time. We see this wonderful rhetoric. It seems that the president embraces the things that the American people voted for him for. It seems like he keeps digging in. He comes back to it. He says Islamic extreme, you know, he says radical Islamic terrorism. He doubles down on it.
He talked about Sharia, for heaven's sakes, which is, of course, the essence of this problem, as we've talked about so many times.
You know what? Actually, Frank, for those of us that did not hear that speech, speak to that. Since that's your bailiwick, what did he say?
Well, Cindy, what he really, I think, got to at the essence of it, both in the campaign, notably in a marvelous speech that he made on the 15th of August of last year in Youngstown, Ohio, and in this national security strategy, is the fact that we're not up against the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or Boko Haram or what have you. We're up against a totalitarian ideology that all of those groups happen to embrace, to be sure, as do the Muslim Brotherhood and others that we've been encouraged to believe we can do business with. Not all Muslims, to be sure, but the ones that adhere to this totalitarian political, military, legal doctrine that they call Sharia are our enemies, and they seek our destruction. He was very clear about that. He talked about it as a jihadist ideology. He talked about the Islamists who are promoting it to try to force all of us to submit to it worldwide. And he actually used the term itself, Sharia. And I think in all of these respects, he's, again, set the direction for his government, for our government. But he has to have people who will faithfully implement it. And I'm sorry to say, but the man who is his national security advisor, who, to be fair, presided over the preparation of this document, but who has done everything he can, I believe, to undermine this agenda for the past year. In fact, when he first came to office, literally his first day speaking to his staff at the National Security Council, he said, "I don't agree with the use of the words radical Islamic terrorism." This is what we call in the intelligence business, Sandy, a clue that he was not going to be on the president's team. And I think he has not been, and much of what's happened in the past year that has deviated from the sensible approaches that the president laid out back in the campaign and yesterday has been, I think, a failure to pursue the agenda of the president, to faithfully fulfill his direction. And the president needs a new national security advisor to make sure that doesn't continue into the future.
Well, and just to be clear, that's H.R. McMaster. We've discussed him many times on this show, and I've discussed him with you, of course. He's not on the same page, which is such a mystery. You know, how does the president come out with such a strong, powerful speech and have a national security advisor that really undermines him at every turn? This is a conundrum. But, Frank, let's talk about what the president said. Let's dwell on the good stuff today, if it's possible. What else about the speech really struck you as, like, yes? I mean, you worked for the Reagan administration. When I heard peace through strength, that was Reagan's term. That must be music to your ears.
It is. So much of what he said yesterday was really music to my ears, Sandy, to use your term. And, yes, it was very redolent of the Reagan view and for that matter, the policies of the president I had the privilege of serving. He started off with founding principles, which was wonderful. I think it spoke very clearly of what makes us an exceptional nation. And, you know, again, that was missing from the Obama presidency almost entirely. He talked about restoring American leadership in the world and influence on the basis of those foundational principles. He talked about the importance of sovereignty. I believe there were 23 different references in the course of the speech to sovereignty, a key point, again, in such stark contrast to the narrative of oh, I don't know, the Clinton and Obama years for sure, and arguably the Bushes as well, that, you know, well, they were all part of the global order, and, you know, we need to subordinate our national interests to the good of what the international community dictates. That's gone in this speech. He talked, and this again is very much out of the Reagan playbook, he talked about using all instruments of national power to advance America's interests in the world. And this is crucial, Sandy. We've done analyses of the Reagan strategy. We've urged that they be, this is at the Center for Security Policy, of course, that they be applied to defeating today's totalitarian threats, just as they did successfully under President Reagan, the last one, Soviet communism. Notably in that mix is economic warfare as one of the tools that we can use. Reagan did so brilliantly. This president, I think, gets it and wants to. He certainly knows that economic warfare is being waged against us by the Chinese and the Russians and others. These are really critical points. And then he went into a number of details about the kind of military capabilities we're going to have, completely rebuilding our nuclear deterrence, something that has not been done, Sandy, since I was in the Reagan administration. We've been living off that investment for all these years. Missile defenses, ensuring that our forces are ready and larger because we're in a dangerous world. And again, as you say, he picked literally the words of Ronald Reagan that we are going to be practicing once again, peace through strength. This is the time-tested policy. It works. The alternatives that have been tried by others, notably and appallingly by Barack Obama, don't. It's time to get back to peace through strength, and I'm hopeful the president will do that.
You know, there's
and again, a new national security team?
Yes, for sure. We're always pushing for that. But let me just say, Niall Gardner wrote an interesting, from Heritage, wrote a good, I think, a synopsis of the speech. And I'm going to borrow a phrase. He says that the president recognized that the United States can best lead on the world stage by upholding its own sovereignty and that of its allies. And Frank, I was just thinking, you know, I think world leaders, I think even Russia and China, in some ways, may find themselves relieved that America may stabilize and go back to its robust strength when, I mean, they know that America's not out to conquer or destroy them. We have a track record of coexistence. I hate that word, but we do have a track record of getting along, except when people, you know, misbehave. And we don't have a track record of grabbing land or taking resources. And so America's a great world leader. I think they know that, even if they never say it. Would you agree?
Don't know, Sandy. I think that both the Russians and the Chinese have become accustomed to a weak and irresolute and accommodating America. And I think they both prefer that. You know, honestly, I think Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping in China have very clearly aspired to fill the vacuum that has been created by Obama and to varying degrees his predecessors in this country. I don't know that they will welcome America being back and being a counterweight to what they're doing and, you know, defending the free world again. But I'm hopeful that they will see the necessity of accommodating themselves to that new reality. And if they do, the world will be a much better place. That's
absolutely.
Sure.
And, you know, and you know, you're right about that, Frank. I think it'd be the other nations that would be glad about this, but you're right about them. I think about, you know, China developing all those islands, to creating islands and expanding their military. And then you think about Russia's conquests of Crimea and other places, and that'll be slapped down a little bit. So you're right, that might not be such good news to them, but it might bring stability to the world, and that'd be good news to their citizens. Frank Gaffney, Center for Security Policy. Frank, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You know, you hear Frank every morning on his commentary at the last segment, and we're so grateful. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Thank you.
Hey, here's some great news, and we could all use some great news for 2018. If you're worried about your healthcare costs or you feel like you're missing out because open enrollment is over, well, it's not too late to join MediShare. You can sign up anytime. And think about this. The typical savings for a family with MediShare is about $500 a month. Think what a difference that would make to your budget. Again, that $500 a month is the typical savings. It could be more or less for you. Definitely worth taking a couple minutes to find out. There are over 300,000 MediShare members sharing each other's medical bills, and something they're now loving, MediShare has a telehealth program that lets you log in and meet with a doctor in real time within the comfort of your own home. For everything from a cold or flu or for a prescription, you can save a lot of time and money, and it's free. Again, open enrollment might be over, but you can still join MediShare. Here's the number to find out more. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Mary Catherine was an attorney and happily married, but infertility led her to separate from her husband. Hi, Kim Catola for Cradle My Heart today, and not long after, she tells LifeSet.com that she suffered date rape. She was in her late 30s and being treated for acute endometriosis. Suspecting a tumor, doctor ordered an ultrasound. But her fear of cancer instantly vanished when the scan showed her pregnancy already at 3 months. She joyfully chose life and never looked back, despite her son's ongoing health concerns of deafness and other special needs. She says, as he grew, we became a mother and son law firm, fighting the battles together, two as one. And she credits her faith in the miraculous power of God. Thinking of nothing other than this, she says, all children are worth saving. Will you help us cradle one heart like Mary Catherine's today? Your tax-deductible gift can help us in saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. Visit CradleMyHeart.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is the one, number one, is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The mainstream media has a new target in their quest to take down President Trump. Russian collusion did not work, so now they're going after Fox News, calling us state media propagandists. But in attacking Fox News, the folks over at CNN and MSNBC are in effect attacking you, the so-called deplorables. They blame you for foiling Hillary Clinton's presidency. They blame you for electing Donald Trump. They hold you in contempt, sipping their apple teeny, slurping caviar at the hoity-toity cafe, leafing through the pages of Vanity Fair. The mainstream media wants to silence Fox News because they know we are reporting the truth. There are nefarious forces at work inside the FBI, men and women who clearly operated with bias against President Trump. Such behavior must be exposed, investigated, and punished. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is an American issue. I'm Todd Stearns.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Investigators with the National Transportation Safety Board arrived here on site overnight and will spend today combing through the wreckage of yesterday morning's fatal train derailment to try to figure out why 12 passenger cars and a locomotive jumped the track, some of those cars spilling down onto the busy freeway below, and you can see they are still there. And while it will take months to determine an official cause, this train was going too fast. Using data recorder information, federal investigators confirmed the train was traveling 80 miles an hour in a 30 mile per hour zone, so 50 over the speed limit, when it careened into the curve and crashed. Now we are getting to hear those chilling first moments after the derailment when the conductor called in to report it.
Amtrak 501, emergency, emergency, emergency. We are on the ground.
Okay.
We are on the bridge. Five at the ground.
That'll do. Easy stop, Jack.
On the freeway. Need EMS ASAP. It looks like they're already starting to show up.
The derailment killed three of the 85 people on the train. 72 victims were treated at nearby hospitals. 10 are listed in serious condition. But we are also hearing amazing survival stories. For instance, a baby on the train escaped unhurt. And many of the survivors are praising bystanders who rushed in to help. One Good Samaritan had training as an Eagle Scout. Another was a neurosurgeon. Dozens of volunteers from a nearby military base also responded and helped save lives. Meantime, President Trump is expressing his condolences and saying the accident, quote, shows more than ever why our soon-to-be submitted infrastructure plan must be approved quickly. Though the Associated Press is reporting this derailment happened on a newly finished track, not a railway plagued with maintenance problems. Still, one local mayor had recently predicted there would be fatalities with high-speed trains running so close to traffic and pedestrians.
All right, that was Claudia Cowan. Her report this morning on Fox News kind of catching us up on the latest on that crash out in Washington State. That's just an amazing story. It really is. And you know what? This is the third Amtrak accident in my recent memory where the train was going way too fast. And, I honestly don't even know what the final decision was on the one out in the corridor going from Washington, D.C. to New York City. You remember, we talked a great deal about that. What was the story on that? They did just go silent when they do these investigations. And so, I don't know. How would I know? But the theme is pretty scary. And so, we do know this. The news this morning, of course, that was new, and Claudia just told us, was that the train was speeding like the other two. 80 miles an hour in a 30-mile zone, and it's a brand-new route, first time it's ever been run, surely. The conductor knew that route and was surely concentrating, not sleeping, none of those kinds of things, because it would have been historic, the first time to make that run. I also heard that the train was 30 minutes late leaving, which is odd, because the whole point of this multi-million-dollar project was to get people from I'm not sure what the origination in Washington, but down to Portland. They were supposed to be getting there faster, so they started 30 minutes late. So that's strange to me, too. But there's a couple of other things I wanted to tell you. The New York Post is reporting this morning that it might have been caused by striking something on the railway. They don't think it's maintenance problems. It was a brand new track. It was the first run. At least three people have been killed, by the way. And so they think it might have been something on the track, but here's a really interesting story out of PJ Media. It says it would be grossly irresponsible to not investigate an Antifa allied group in the same region that previously claimed responsibility for obstructing train tracks with concrete. The anarchist group is called It's Going Down. Last April, bragged online about sabotaging railroad tracks in the Pacific Northwest to block fracking equipment from getting to its destination. The group has since deleted the post, possibly in reaction to today's Amtrak disaster. But there is a parody account for Antifa that they have found, that they posted a picture of it on this article. We'll put this article on our Facebook page so that you can see it and share it. It's PJ Media. Anarchists bragged in April about sabotaging railroad tracks to block fracking. That's a pretty amazing possibility. And then, of course, the second story out of the New York Post, they might have struck something on the railway. And, of course, we know the conductor was speeding. So this is interesting. But the problem is, will we ever hear what really happened? It'll be interesting to see. If in this accident they actually come to a conclusion and announce it, I just don't understand why those things are quite as murky as they have to be, but they are. And, of course, it's tragic because people have lost their lives. This is not a game. And people say, if Antifa's involved in this, that, they're nonviolent. I've heard the apologies made for them. And if they are connected to this, that would be a big turn of events against Antifa, I think. And so let's just hope that they get to the bottom of it. On the other part, we talked about the Atlanta airport going black over the weekend. Jonathan Seary has an update. I talked to you a little bit. I alluded to the fact that this fire in the electric circuits made me think of what I know about our enemies targeting our electrical grid, meaning targeting, seeing what would happen if our electrical source is shut down. I know they're working on that. Now, we've been concerned about North Korea, you know, doing something in space to destroy our electrical grid. So these are conversations that have been happening for a long time, and that's what made me wonder what happened in the Atlanta airport. I don't know, and I don't. If they know, they're surely not telling us. But Jonathan Siri has an update. Let's listen.
Passengers captured the confusion on social media. A power outage lasting nearly 11 hours at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport.
At this time, there is no evidence to suggest that the fire was caused deliberately.
Georgia Power says equipment failure sparked a fire in an underground electrical facility that also knocked out backup systems serving the world's busiest airport.
How could this possibly happen to an airport this important and this size? And of course, the first sign, you know, the first thing that everybody thought was terrorism.
With all the terrorism that has been going on around the world, it kind of occurred to me that something like that was going on, that everything shut down.
Although this incident appears accidental, experts worry what this says about the vulnerability of critical infrastructure to terrorism.
A fire of this nature that has this kind of an impact on the world's busiest airport signals that the infrastructure has not been properly thought through in terms of its redundancy and its resiliency.
Michael Balboni is former Deputy Secretary for Public Safety in New York State.
It sends a message to terrorists that we have not sewn up all of the security and all of the resiliency of our critical assets, and that they are vulnerable to specific attacks.
Hartsfield-Jackson officials say the airport's operating at 95% capacity. Georgia Power continues to investigate the cause of the fire, company officials pledging to focus on reliability and making sure this never happens again. Brett?
Jonathan Siri on Fox yesterday. And of course, no one was hurt, as far as I know, in the Atlanta airport. But you just wonder if it wasn't a rehearsal. I mean, or maybe it was an accident. I don't know. I mean, a rehearsal for people who wish us bad things, people who want to destroy and sabotage. Or was it just an accident? I don't really know. I think that the commentator that Jonathan interviewed there had a point that at the very least, it's instructive to our enemies about what kind of chaos they can cause if they target our electrical systems. Of course, a lot has been happening this week in terms of Robert Mueller, the special counsel, and his investigation of the alleged collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians. In fact, Kevin Cork has an update on that, and then I have a few things to tell you about that, so let's listen.
It was a definitive three-word response.
No, I'm not.
President Trump's answer to a question about whether he planned to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller came following an explosive claim by California Democratic Congresswoman Jackie Speier.
I believe that the president wants all of this shut down, and he wants to fire Special Counsel Mueller. The rumor on the Hill when I left yesterday was that the president was going to make a significant speech at the end of next week, and on December 22nd, when we are out of D.C., he was going to fire Robert Mueller.
Speier's comments echo an oft-used narrative in the media, one that's also been repeatedly shot down by the White House.
Is he setting the stage
Bob
Mueller?
There's no conversation about that whatsoever in the White House, Chuck. You guys keep bringing that up. We have continued to cooperate in every single possible way with that investigation.
That cooperation, however, has become strained by the revelation that the Mueller team used the General Services Administration to gain access to tens of thousands of Trump transition emails. Prosecutors reportedly used them to question witnesses in the Russia probe. In his letter to congressional lawmakers, attorney Corey Langhofer accused the GSA and the Mueller team of, quote, unlawful conduct that undermines the Presidential Transition Act of 1963. During the transition, the Trump team used PTT.gov email addresses, including confidential attorney-client and privileged communications. Special Counsel Office spokesman Peter Carr said in a statement, "When we have obtained emails in the course of our ongoing criminal investigation, we have secured either the account owner's consent or appropriate criminal process."
All right, Kevin Cork of Fox. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't know where this is going to end up. Certainly the Mueller team, well, I'll just put it this way. Andy McCarthy, who is a guest on our show often. He's a friend of mine. He writes about this all the time. Andy was a prosecutor of the blind shake in the World Trade Center bombing. He was a former New York U.S. attorney in the Manhattan office. A brilliant guy. And actually, this is Andy and I've sort of, I'm much more critical of Mueller's process than Andy has been in writing. But he came out with a piece this morning that surprised me. It's called Mueller's Scorched Earth Tactics, again. And then he goes through and he says this is just not necessary. It was not necessary. He explains that the General Services Office was sort of the repository, just the place, the bank, the place, the vault, the big box where the transition emails were kept, and that they didn't really have the authority to turn over all of the Trump transition team's email to the Mueller investigation, not without permission. They are not an entity to be giving permission. So someone just turned all of these email. These are private email from private citizens trying to help President Trump make this transition, trying to advise him, trying to help him figure out staff and personnel and strategy, very personal conversations that they thought were personal, that the Mueller team took thousands of them and then let, I think, even congressmen, Democratic congressmen, use them to ask questions. And so it's a very serious breach. And I want to read something to you. Rick Manning, who's a frequent guest on here, was part of the transition team for President Trump. And he says, this wasn't a subpoena pursuant to a grand jury. The General Services account just turned them over, according to a White House advisor. As a member of the Trump transition team, I am deeply offended that Robert Mueller thinks that he can get away with snooping through confidential policy conversations without obtaining a warrant. What's more, the General Services Administration's choice to give away transition team documents without forcing a legal warrant to be issued effectively ends future transitions, meaning presidential transitions, ability to consider policy in an open manner utilizing official resources. Mueller's shotgun investigative approach, which apparently assumes everyone is guilty until proven innocent, will leave a permanent stain on American jurisprudence and end the illusion of a nonpartisan justice system. And he goes on to make a very important point. He's alluded to it, but now he makes it more clear. Nothing less than the normal, peaceful transition of power is at stake as a result of Mueller's abuses, as future presidents-elect will be forced to assume that every internal consideration will be subject to public scrutiny. No incoming administration can ever again engage in the type of policy what-ifs necessary to assume the executive branch responsibilities now that the wall of confidentiality has been breached. And then Grick goes on to read, in the Constitution, not in the Constitution, but in our statutes, Presidential Transition Act of 1963, Section 2. This is what it says. Any disruption occasioned by the transfer of the executive power could produce results detrimental to the safety and well-being of the United States and its people. Do you understand what he's saying there? Trump and his team of, citizens, family members, people volunteering, people that they chose to help them in transition, and there were hundreds of them and hundreds. They spent hours and hours and hours, all of their private correspondence taken by Bob Mueller without permission and used against the people that were just trying to help private citizens. We have no idea where this is going to end, making that stuff public. And so Rick is saying that if the next president is elected and there's rancor, which there always is. They're trying, each team is trying to win. So now the incoming, let's say President Trump does this to the incoming Democratic presidential candidate, takes all of their, someone that's favoring him, takes all of their private correspondence, all their strategy, all the things they're thinking, and takes all that information and hands it out. That's pretty scary. Or uses it to prosecute them, comb over it, try to find things that may have a hint of something that illegal. These are just conversations, but they're important conversations and they should have been private. It really is scorched earth tactics, as Andy McCarthy has said. All right, so then something big is happening on Capitol Hill. I think you know the tax bill probably will be voted on today, and I've asked my favorite economist, Congressman Dave Brat, to join us to kind of dissect this bill. Tell us about what's happening with the budget, what's happening with DACA, what's happening with Paul Ryan, etc. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
With flattering lips and a double heart, they speak. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Akayed Ullah attempted a massive suicide bomb mission at the Port Authority bus terminal in Manhattan, New York, all in the name of ISIS, as confirmed by NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill. In the end, the attacker severely wounded himself and superficially injured three other people, one of whom was treated on the scene and released. Mainstream media outlets fell over themselves in their attempts to describe this attacker as a lone wolf. It's time we dispense with the notion that Islamic jihadists are lone wolves. They come from an ideological wolf pack.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Cross-examine.
What is the most important skill you need to learn if you want your life to be a success into eternity? I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that the answer to that question is to properly interpret the Bible. That's the skill you need to have.
Listen to Cross-Examine with Frank Turek, Saturday mornings at 9 Central and Sunday afternoons at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
Parenting is a multifaceted challenge, and it's important that our kids know our values.
Equip yourself as a parent with resources from the AFA Cultural Institute and parenting expert John Rosemond. These four DVDs on biblical parenting address the issues of discipline, seasons of parenting, the folly of modern child psychology, and raising teenagers. You'll find all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
Here's Dr. Carl Truman from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
What does the Holy Spirit really do in my life? The Holy Spirit primarily convicts me of the presence of Christ. The Holy Spirit is the means by which I'm united to Christ and the means by which I'm convicted of the presence of Christ in my life. I can be emotionally broken if that conviction is of a particular sin that I have. Maybe it's not a directly emotional thing all the time. Maybe sometimes it's a profoundly intellectual thing that I suddenly become certain of the truth of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, some people might say that all sounds rather irrational. But there are a lot of things we're convicted of in this life that have no strictly rational basis. I am absolutely convinced that my mother is my mother. How do I know that? She's my mother.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump unveiled yesterday a national security strategy that bears an uncanny resemblance to the platform on which he campaigned for office. For those of us who voted for his pledge to restore the practice of peace through strength and American greatness, this is a most welcome development. That's because for the intervening year, Mr. Trump has been saddled with insubordinate subordinates who objected to much of his national and homeland security agenda. Having served in many cases in the previous administration, they were determined, the electorate's direction notwithstanding, to act as though it's Obama's third term. If Donald Trump means to keep his promised dramatic course corrections on things like Sharia supremacism, nuclear deterrence, missile defense, and border security, he must replace National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster with someone who actually supports and will faithfully execute his strategy for American security and greatness. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, it's a big day on Capitol Hill, very big day, because the tax bill is scheduled for a vote, and it's been a slog. It has been a real slog. And I think, you know, I don't know that this does not speak to the final product from my perspective. I don't feel enough of an expert to really certainly be definitive about it. But I would say this is an accomplishment, no doubt about it, for them to have worked so hard and to work through all their issues and to come out with a bill where I think all but like 8% of Americans will receive a tax cut. That's pretty amazing. And we're going to talk about it in more detail in just a second when Congressman Brett joins us. It's a very busy day for him, as you can imagine, and all of them. So much going on because, you know, the short-term spending bill expires, I believe, Friday night. And so that's the whole other issue they have to face after this tax bill allegedly, hopefully, is passed in just a little bit today. But I'm speaking of money. You know, this is the end of the year, and this is the time when most people who want to give to charitable organizations try to make their final donations so they can claim it on their taxes. Now, that's, you know, I know that's not the reason you get for the American Family Association, but it is a benefit. And so we're getting close to the end of the year, and we hope that you will please consider a year-end gift to AFA. You can do that by going to afa.net, afa.net. You know that the American Family Association never backs down from the call to restore America to be truly one nation under God. We've had pressure from political correctness, public policy, even from sister organizations to maybe back off, but we don't back off. And so we appreciate your support in that. We're a team, you and us. We're a team. I do radio and many people working in the movie studios and others working, you know, engineering. My Adam and Rob work every day behind the scenes. We are a team, but the mission is clear. We're trying to be salt and light in this country and really in this world. And so if you would like to give something to AFA here at the end of the year, you can go to afa.net. And by the way, you heard a little bit of blurb in that commercial break on this new video we have called The God Who Speaks. It's a brand new video. And, you know, AFA Studios puts out the best stuff. And so this will be your gift if you can manage, at the end of this year, when I know you're spending a lot of money on Christmas and other things, if you have money that you can give to AFA as a year-end gift, we'll send you The God Who Speaks. Okay, so go to afa.net, afa.net, and make your best donation. I'm going to give you a little background on this tax bill while we're waiting for Congressman Brett to call. We're trying to find him. I think he's always so good about calling, but I just have to tell you, I can only imagine what it's like on Capitol Hill this morning. And so hopefully he'll give us a call. The one thing that struck me when I was reading this information is that there's an article. What's the outlet here? It's written by John Carney, but I'm not sure what the outlet is. And he says, half of Americans predict that the tax bill Congress is close to passing will raise their taxes, a view that is contrary to all serious studies of the tax bill. According to the Nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation's assessment of the Senate version of the bill, just 8.1% of Americans would see their taxes rise under this bill. That number is likely lower now that the child tax credit and deduction for state and local taxes have been expanded in the final version of the bill. Yet, a Monmouth University poll shows that 50% of the public say they expect their taxes will go up. Just 14% say their taxes will go down. The JCT, Joint Committee on Taxation, estimates that 61.7% of taxpayers will get a tax cut. And again, they think the number will actually be higher when the final bill is reached. So the point is public ignorance, public ignorance. They've been caught in a wave of propaganda from the left about how horrible this tax bill is, and that's why they're responding the way they are, because they're being lied to. It's just the way it goes, you know, on every issue. The news cooperates with the left to fan the flames, phony studies. That's why that, you know, Ear to the Ground organization that we just launched last Friday, Ear to the Ground, if you haven't seen it, go to the Ear to the Ground website, and we are going to be doing polls, true polls, honest polls, that really can tell you what the grassroots, what America is really thinking. They're really good polls with a great sample. And the one we just did was on patriotism, which sounds maybe sort of trite, but it isn't. It's on the difference between the view of what it means to be an American between the left and the right. It will startle you, and it will also stimulate your thinking. So I'll go to Ear to the Ground. That website, and you'll see that, and you'll be hearing more about this, plus it's on our Facebook page, Sandy Rios in the Morning. So 47% of the public disapprove of the tax reform efforts, just 26% approve, and just 29% say they wanted the bill to succeed. You know, and that's because they're being told about how horrible it is. It's making the rich richer and the The poor, and you know the drill. It's the whole Marxist class envy strategy. It works. It works. It's just amazing. I think that's why communism has maintained its grip, because it preys on people's worst instincts. You know, envy, stirring up strife. Oh, did he say that? Do you know what he said about you? It's like the old thing with, sisters and mothers, or friends even, girls especially, pairing off and whispering bad things about each other or reporting things that the other said, causing trouble. That's what the left does. That's what communism teaches and preaches in Saul Alinsky, and it works really well. Oh, did you see? They're going to get a break, but you're not going to get a break. They're going to get this, and it's yours, and this is the way it goes. It works. It works every time. By the way, another great stat coming out. Black unemployment under Trump is the lowest it has been in, guess what? Fill in the blanks. What do you think? 17 years. The national unemployment rate for Black Americans aged 16 and over is the lowest it has been in 17 years, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In November 2016, the unemployment rate for Black people was at 8%. And in November 2017, that rate dropped to 7.3%, a percentage not seen since the months of September, October, and November of 2000. The unemployment rate, it's not just Black Americans, it's Hispanic Americans. Their unemployment rate fell from 5.7% to 4.7%. That's the lowest it's been for Hispanic Americans in 44 years. The unemployment rate for whites and Asians hovered around 3%, roughly the same. So that hasn't changed. But for Black Americans, it's dropped. It doesn't say what the original. It doesn't say exactly what it's dropped by, but it's dropped to 7.3%. And then for Hispanics, it's dropped to 4.7%. And for whites and Asians, it's 3%. So, by the way, in the broader economic news, you know that the stock market is just going crazy. It's like, I think, I forget which particular rating has gone up like 70 times since Trump has been elected. Just making amazing progress. I don't know. That's kind of scary to me sometimes, because it's like a netherworld, all this stock market stuff, because it's not real money, and it can come and it can go. It can go as quickly as it came. But still, the markets are responding to what they're seeing, and they're encouraged. Reuters reported that the U.S. economy grew at a faster rate in the third quarter of 2017 than forecasted by economic experts, of course, because they don't want it to grow. But let's just say gross domestic product reportedly reached 3.3% higher than the original estimate of 3%. It's the fastest recorded growth in the past 3 years. And I heard yesterday it's probably going to go higher than that. So we'll see. President Trump is happy. He tweeted, consumer confidence is at an all-time high, along with a record-high stock market. Unemployment is at 17-year low. Make America great again. Working to pass massive tax cuts, looking good. And so that's the news on that. And, of course, the effect on the economy is having an effect as much as people know about it. You know, people don't know the economy's doing well unless they hear it in the news. And this is what I noticed back in the Bush years, when the economy did well until 2008 under President Bush. With President Clinton, they talked about the economy all the time, and it did do well under him. But they reported, amazing, the stock market is rising. I mean, every morning or every day, every newscast would lead with how wonderful things were. And then when President Bush was in office, the stock market reached other heights, but they wouldn't mention it. They didn't talk about it, or it'd be at the end of the news, or it'd be like, oh, in the stock market, blah, 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 blah. You know, they have a way of managing the information. So I don't really know how many Americans are clued in so that they actually know how good the financial information is. But surely in our own lives, we're seeing a difference. Are we not seeing a certain optimism? I sense it. I know when my husband and I would drive across country, we often will drive from Washington, D.C. to Chicago, which is home for us. Then we go across the inner parts of the United States, Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, and we would see such depression. so many businesses closed, and people, we would stop in restaurants and people would be so, you could just see they were not doing well. And it was sad. It was so sad. And I sense that things are turning around. I just pray that they are. This is not about making money, but it is about people being able to survive and provide for their families. Let me amend that. I'm not saying it's not about making. I'm talking about making money just for the sake of making money. We all need resources and money. We need enough money to live on, and we need reserve. And that's, I think, where we're headed, God willing. All right, so here's another. This is kind of an interesting story it's a good story. So often I share bad stories with you. So this is a good one. Melania Trump's popularity soars. Majority now view her favorably, the polls show. Her favorability rating has risen 17 points since January to 54%. And that's according to a recent Gallup poll. Just 1/3 of Americans say they have an unfavorable view of the first lady, while 13% say they have no opinion. And so, of course, some are saying, well, it's maybe because of the Christmas decorations and the information that got out about her Christmas. Remember how was Huffington Post and other outlets were just scathing in their criticism of the way Melania oversaw the decorations at the White House, how horrible they were and how bleak and et cetera, you fill in the blank. And I think some are saying that was just a bridge too far. People are saying, why are you politicizing Christmas decorations? You can criticize the president without trashing the first lady over those gorgeous decorations. And so I think maybe there is a turnaround, although Mrs. Trump still does not have the ratings that Michelle Obama and Laura Bush and Hillary Clinton even. She had 58% at this time in her husband's tenure as president. And of course, Melania came in late. And of course, she has a husband that seems to be very controversial and very hated by so many Americans, whether it be the left or the never Trumpers, these pompous intellectuals, that's what they think they are, in Washington, D.C., who are just insulted that a man so plain spoken and untethered in his remarks, like they, not as measured, he just isn't worthy of them. And so they hate him. And by the way, the same poll showed that 56% of Americans view the president unfavorably, while 41% view him favorably. So we'll see. You know, I have to say on Melania Trump, I was concerned about her. I didn't know her, but knew, you know, her past, knew what she did. And I couldn't imagine her being first lady. Couldn't imagine it. That bothered me a great deal. But I think people change, don't you? I think that God changes us. And I remember Melania, one of the first public appearances she made around the inauguration time, she read the Lord's Prayer with such passion and clarity. Of all things, that's what she chose to do. She stood and read it. It was absolutely beautiful. And I sensed at the time there's a change in this girl's life. There's been a change. And she's been nothing but a lady, nothing but gracious. And there's good reason to like her and respect her. So there you go. That's the good news today. Well, we'll have to catch up with Congressman Brad tomorrow. I bet he has stories to tell. What do you think? So we'll have to get the scoop, and we'll share it with you tomorrow. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining today. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to spend this time with you each and every morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.